The opinions expressed by guests of this show are their own and do not necessarily align with those of us here at the Animal Soulmates podcast.
She was the biggest lap dog in the world.
And she hated to be uncomfortable. So, like, I remember we were, like, working in the garage one day, and there was a dust pile, and there wasn't, like, anything that she could lay on. So she went and climbed over and laid in the dust pile so it would be comfortable. And I'm like, oh, this poor dog. Like, she's such a princess and so spoiled. Yeah, but she did not like to be uncomfortable. People don't see that, like, princess side of the little pit bull. They just think, oh, that dog's gonna eat me. That dog will smother you with kisses, is what that dog will do.
Welcome to the Animal Soulmates podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Abby Viscardi. I'm an animal welfare scientist and, more importantly, an obsessed dog mom. I believe that the unconditional love and connection that we share with our animals is more powerful than we realize. This podcast will honor the stories of these amazing creatures that have walked with us and changed our lives forever. So join me, and together we will explore the true power of the human-animal bond. Welcome back to another episode of the Animal Soulmates podcast. This week, my scruffy mutt Annie was my co-host, and you can actually see her in a reel that we put together for this episode, which was posted both to our official Instagram and TikTok accounts. They have the exact same handle to keep it easy, at Animal Soulmates Pod. You'll also be able to see Frank Sinatra and his reel, which was posted last week. So please give those accounts a follow for all podcast-related updates. I'm so grateful to be able to bring you another Animal Soulmate story today. I came across Kristen Murray's work when I signed up for an online pet photography training/conference called the Hair of the Dog Summit. I believe it occurred in September of 2022, although I didn't actually start listening to those talks until December of that year. If you're interested, I've linked that website into the show notes, so check it out. It was very interesting. Kristen's talk I found to be super engaging, and her portraits were just amazing. So I started following her on Instagram. And shortly after, I saw a number of posts that she made about her soul dog named Kona, who was a beautiful white pity girl. And as a fellow pity mom, I absolutely love following Instagram accounts with pit bull content. So I was very excited to see that she had a pit bull as well. But it actually turns out that we lost our animal soulmates about 6 weeks apart. And I was quite raw in my grief when I saw her posting about Kona, and it did make me feel in that moment like I wasn't alone, that there was somebody else who was also hurting with the loss of an animal soulmate. And so fast forward about a year or so, as soon as I knew that this podcast was in development, I just had to reach out to Kristen to see if she'd be willing to share her story. And I'm so grateful that she agreed to. We talk a lot about grief and pet loss in this episode, so make sure you have those tissues handy again and enjoy episode 2, A Pit Bull Named Kona.
Hi, my name is Kristen Murray. I am a dog photographer in Richmond, Virginia. I grew up right outside of Richmond in a small little town, and I've always had animals, like, ever since growing up. Our family wasn't really like a animal family until I came along when I was like a baby. There was a creek behind our house and there was ducks, and my first word was duck outside of like mom and dad. So I think, like, I don't know, I've always been an animal lover. And when I was 3 or 4, we got our first dog, and then she got really sick and went to live on a farm. You know, only after did I learn really she got sick and she had to be put down. But after that, our neighbors always had dogs, and I was always at the neighbor's house. There was a golden retriever named Taffy, and then like a little shepherdy mix named Sweetie, and they were my childhood surrogate dogs.
So it seems like you just sort of innately had this connection with animals. You can't really place where it came from. It's like you were just kind of born with this connection.
Yeah, I can't really place it. I do remember a story my mom telling me when I was 3 years old. Two houses down, our neighbors had a litter of puppies, and I would go over there and steal the puppies and bring them home. I was like, these are my friends. And the neighbors, thankfully, they loved it. They let me play with them all the time. I have zero recollection of that. My first core memory of being with these animals is the golden retriever next door and the shepherd a couple houses down. They were, I guess, really influential. At the time, I didn't really think so. They were just, you know, my adopted dogs. And but now looking back, I'd say that they had a big influence in my love of animals. I remember our neighborhood was a lot quieter. I think I was one of like three kids in the entire neighborhood. So I didn't have a lot of friends to play with. And any of my imaginary friends, they were not people. They were all animals, whether that was like dogs and cats or little woodland creatures. I remember I had like some imaginary bunny friends. I have people friends now. But animals this still play a huge, huge role in my life.
And so did you always know that you were going to pursue a career with animals? Was this something that you kind of knew you were going to do?
So I've had a lot of jobs since 16. You know, it's funny because my very first job was working at CVS in the photo lab. And it's really funny that it's kind of come full circle and I'm now, you know, photographer. But I worked as a dog groomer, a dog trainer, a dog sitter, in between, you know, all these other jobs and careers that I had. Something always drew me, you know, as a kid, you want to be like a vet or a dolphin trainer. And then you realize like what goes into being a vet and the amount of schooling. So I guess you could say I've always known that I would be working with animals, just in what capacity.
I don't want to jump too far ahead into your career stuff because I think that that would be a nice sort of like end cap to the podcast. But if you're comfortable getting into your story with Kona,
yeah,
how did she come into your life? What was the situation around getting her?
Yeah, so Kona came into my life when my dad was going through cancer treatments. As one does, they go to the shelter to make themselves feel better. Not really looking for a dog. You know, that's the hugest mistake ever. You'll always walk out with a pup. But she was the last dog in the kennel. And you know how when you walk down into a pound or a county shelter or whatever you want to call it, and the dogs are either miserable in the back of a cage or they are so overstimulated that they are just barking everywhere and like, it's sensory overload. And I remember going down each row and it was like, oh, you're cute, or, oh, you know, I didn't really have a connection with anything. And then I got to the last kennel in this run and she was just sitting there at the front of the cage. She was quiet. She was just looking at me and I was like, oh, and we locked eyes and I swear, like I felt something.
Yeah.
And I was like, I have to have her. And so I did. I went back and I got her the next day. And it turns out that quiet little puppy, not quiet, she turned into a white tornado. She was so full of energy and so just happy. And like her demeanor completely changed. And I mean, I didn't expect her to be like this calm, quiet, you know, pit bull. But she was a lot of energy, a lot.
And do you know about how old she was? Or do you know her situation before getting to the shelter?
She was about 5 to 6 months. They found her on the side of the road. What I think was she was the cutest puppy in the entire world, and somebody wanted her and then realized how much energy she had and said, nope, I can't handle this. Because there were days where I was like, can I handle this?
Mm-hmm.
You know, because she was really like my first adult dog, right? Like we had dogs growing up in the family, but she was really my first, like, I'm going to get a dog living on my own as an adult. I really do think like the dog that you get in your 20s completely changes you.
Yeah.
They grow with you. You grow up with each other. You learn how to be an independent adult with this dog. So that has a huge effect on you.
My animal soulmate, Amira, I got her when I was 19, and exactly what you said. She was my first dog, like the first dog that was mine. And I had full control over raising her and training her. And yeah, you are figuring out yourself who you are with this animal walking you through it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And then you have a big crisis of identity when you lose them.
Yes.
Who am I now without this dog?
Oh my God. Yeah. I'm still dealing with that. Yeah. And so how old were you when that day when you went into the shelter?
22-ish.
Yeah.
I mean, I could go back and do the math if I really wanted to. She passed. Yeah, I think I was 21, 22. Because my dad passed shortly after. And so she was really instrumental in the grieving process with going through all of that.
And so what made her different than other dogs you had in your life or other animals you had in your life?
What made her different? Probably just the straight fact that she was mine. I mean, I was the one who was deciding what were we going to do? What type of life did I want to give her? I was living in Florida a lot at the time, and we would go to the beach almost like every single day. And the beach was her happy place. And I don't even like Now, I don't even like the beach, right? Like, there's too much sand. You sit on the beach for like an hour or two and you're kind of done, for me at least. But she loved it. And there were times where I'm like, I don't want to do this, but I'm going to do this for you. I don't know if she was in fact different or just the relationship that I had with her was different,
right?
than anything else, you know? And I mean, also back like growing up, you know, in the 90s, if your dog shows a little bit of resource guarding, you put them out on a chain in the yard because that makes everything so much better. Back then, you didn't know what you know now.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we always had outside dogs growing up, and Kona was really like my first child, but not, you know what I mean?
Yes.
Yeah. And I mean, I'm a dog mom through and through, but she was the dog who made me a dog mom.
Yeah. So we see a lot of pit bulls come through the shelter system still today. I think that they are just a highly stigmatized breed. It sounds like she was comfortable enough to be running around a beach. What was her personality like towards other people or towards other dogs?
She loved other people. Loved people. Speaking of stigma, I remember one time we were in a store, and she's a white dog with a few black spots on her ears, and then like a big old black spot on her butt. And this kid came up, didn't ask if they could pet her, but you know, whatever. So the kid is like 4 years old, loving all up on her. She's just sitting, like getting all excited for giving the kid kisses. And the mom was like, oh my gosh, is she a Dalmatian? And I said, no, she's a pit bull. And she snatched her child up so fast. Like you would have thought Kona was, you know, like going for the jugular. I was like, you were fine mm-hmm. with her loving all up on your kid when you thought she was a Dalmatian, but now all of a sudden she's a pit bull and she's having a problem. I was very angry. But yeah, they're highly stigmatized. Kona loved people. Like when we were on the beach, I remember there was a group of like people playing football or whatever, and she just like would join the party because she loved balls, and anything round was, you know, whether it was a beach ball, soccer ball, apple, she went nuts for it. She was great with other dogs who let her have her space. She was not okay with like dogs rushing at her face, but I don't think any dog is okay with that. But that was something like her being a pit bull, I had to always be like on guard of other people. Because of course, you know, anything that happens, no matter whose fault it is, it's my fault.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I just think it's the people who exploit them. They want to serve you. They are so loyal and so like, whatever you want, mom, you've given me praise. This is the best thing. I'm going to, you know, and it's the people who take advantage of that, that really makes a bad dog.
Yeah. As a fellow pit bull mama, I am resonating with everything that you're saying. I mean, it's almost like we feel like we have to protect him from himself, because if anything were to happen, the headline is going to be pit bull does whatever. It's not going to be true to the actual scenario, but they are the most loving. There's nothing this dog wants more than to just like curl up on you and love you.
She was the biggest lap dog in the world. And she hated to be uncomfortable. So like, I remember we were like working in the garage one day, and there was a dust pile, and there wasn't like anything that she could lay on. So she went and climbed over and laid in the dust pile so it would be comfortable. And I'm like, this poor dog. Like, she's such a princess and so spoiled. Yeah, but she didn't like to be uncomfortable. People don't see that like princess side of the little pit bull. They just think, oh, that dog's gonna eat me.
Mm-hmm.
The dog will smother you with kisses is what that dog will do.
I know. It's so funny too when you have a dog from a shelter who becomes that princess, because you're just like, do you remember what your life was like before? And now you're just like, what? This isn't a memory foam bed for me? Like, you want me to lay on this blanket? Like, what? Are you crazy?
I do think that they're a little more grateful, though,
mm-hmm.
because they know how bad it was. But they do push. They do 100% push. They get their way all the time.
Yeah. So you did mention this, and we don't have to go too much into it, but losing your dad and Kona being there for you, were there other big life events that she was there for you with or helped you through, or even good, not necessarily bad, but some good things that she was there?
She was there when I met my now husband. We had a little rocky first 2 years. So she was there with me through all of that. And then I remember I wanted her to be in the wedding, but we couldn't have dogs at the wedding. So I rented an Airbnb the night before, and I had my mom and Kona and my maid of honor, and we all stayed there, and it was like this little girls thing. And that ended up turning into annual girls trips with my mom and Kona. And we would go out to the mountains or just run an Airbnb. And, you know, she's always there for that. I mean, when I say there for everything, like literally there for everything. If I couldn't go, if Quinn couldn't go, I typically didn't go. She was just there for the good times and the bad, and like me making mistake after good time after, you know, everything. It's hard to pinpoint like specific, other than like, you know, the loss of my dad and my wedding day, and it's hard to like pinpoint specifics when she was just there for all of it.
I mean, it seemed like she was one of the girls.
Definitely one of the girls. Yeah, definitely one of the girls.
Yeah,
you know, when she passed, I looked at my husband and I was like, this is the end of the era, because we both came into the relationship. He had a dog, I had Kona, and then we got one together. When Kona passed, I was like, it's the end of an era, you know, and I don't know how the boys are going to react, because there's always Kona and the boys, because we have Deeks and Leroy, and they're both little shepherdy dogs. You know, I didn't know what dynamic it would be or how our life would change. And it was hard. It was really hard. I think I had a harder time with the anticipation and anticipatory grief stage and going through all of that. I mean, when she finally passed, it was devastating, but it was also like a little bit of relief because she's no longer in pain. The decision was made. You know, now I just have to learn how to live without her rather than wrestling with the, am I doing this too early? Am I doing this too late? You know, and still having her in a lot of pain.
Yeah, I went through a bit of that too, where you kind of grieve their loss while they're still here. And that's hard.
It's really hard.
It's hard, yeah.
Because you're not only grieving the loss of them, you're grieving the loss of all the plans that you had made.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
For me, it was Abby and Amira against the world. And for you, it was Kona and Kristen against the world. And it's hard to imagine that ending.
Yeah.
Now it's just me against the world. Even though you have your husband and you have your other animals, that feels very much like, but I'm alone again, you know?
Yes. Yes. Now, my husband was supportive as he could be.
Mm-hmm.
This is not anything against him, but there were times where I'm just like, nothing you're doing is helping. You know, but nothing anyone could do would help. And there were times when I'm just like, I just want to go in the bed and cry and cry. And I think there was like, that was a good 2 months. I actually went on a road trip by myself to kind of like grieve and get a little past it. It's been almost a year. December 1st will be a year. You know, there are times where like something will happen and I'll just be like, oh, I'm past the, I see Kona or like think that she's there if like one of the cats goes back, because they have a black and white cat, you know, so I'm past that, like catch her out of the corner of my eye, but I'm still at the point where like certain memories or certain things will bring me back and it'll all hit me all over again. And I'll just have to like 15 minutes and bawl my eyes out and then, you know, breathe and move on. That grief comes in waves. I don't know if you're still wrestling and dealing and struggling with this, but like it'll come in waves, and sometimes you just feel like you are completely held under and then rocketed to the surface to where you can breathe for a hot second and then held under again, but it's starting to subside and be a little bit more calm. That also makes me feel a little guilty.
Yeah, I mean, it's grief is so complicated. Because there is that guilt of like, am I forgetting them if I'm not still grieving them? But then you're like, I don't want to be in this grief state forever. It feels terrible. So we just came up on Amira's 1 year passing, and you try not to think about it, but then the weather changes. And so it's the same temperature, and it's like your body remembers it was around this time that she started to decline. And it hit me really hard. And it's one of those things, like it's been a year and I don't know how I got through a year without her. It's like, how has it been a year since I last like took you for a walk or kissed you? It never sort of flows the way you think it will, that like it's going to just subside gradually and then it gets easier. Some days it feels like she just left. Like that grief is so raw and so present. And then other days, like you said, you're like, I'm doing okay today, actually. Like I can look at pictures and smile, and I can talk about her and smile. And other days it's like, don't even bring her up because I'm just going to be a mess.
It is the longest year of my life and also the shortest year.
Yeah.
It is so strange. I grieved for my dad, but I felt like actually, you know what? I probably didn't grieve for my dad like I should have. And so I wonder if like a lot of the grieving of Kona, because she was also the last thing I had of my dad.
Yeah.
Right? I think I was grieving her and still him at the same time, like all intermixed in one, that I didn't really recognize until now.
I think that this level of grief needs to be more normalized, because I find there just isn't this sort of like acceptance that you break down and you can't get out of bed because you've lost your dog 6 months ago or whatever the timeline.
It's just a dog, honey. You'll get another one.
Right. I mean, that's the whole reason that I want to have these conversations and put it out in the public space to try to normalize, like, it's so much more than just a dog. This is like
so much.
It literally, she was my soulmate. Kona was your soulmate. It's like, how do you go on without this soulmate walking beside you? It's hard.
It's a learning process. And for the people who have never been through this, I'm glad. I don't wish this on anyone. But also, if you haven't been through this, you haven't had the love. You haven't had that connection with this type of dog. And I mean, it will forever change. It'll forever change you. And it also will forever change your relationship with any new dog that you have. So, and there's something really beautiful about, I don't want to say it's beautiful about this level of grief, because this honestly fucking sucks, but it's terrible. But it's also, if I didn't feel this deeply, I wouldn't have had the relationship that I had with her.
And you would never go back and change it for the world.
Oh, absolutely not.
I would do it again and again.
Any day, every day. I mean, I'm actively currently doing it again. You know, trying to grow a relationship with a new puppy, which has been quite an interesting journey. So no one really talks about the dog you have after your soul dog and how much pressure you put on yourself and that dog. Speaking of, she just scratched at the door to come in.
So. Oh, she knows we're talking about her now. So how soon after Kona did you get Cedar? This is Cedar we're talking about?
Yeah, this is Cedar. So Cedar has been in the plans for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
If you see that dog behind me in the painting, that is her dad.
Oh, wow.
And I met him. Mm-hmm. I met him and I said, I fell in love. Brittany's were never on my radar. I met him, fell in love with him. And I said, if you ever decide to sire a litter, I want one. So they had found a female, really great, reputable breeder, but they found a female. And I found out that they were trying to breed and have a litter while Kona was that. You want to talk about a struggle emotionally. Yeah. So I found out that they were trying to breed like while I was trying to make these decisions about Kona. So sometimes I feel like I got a dog really quickly after Kona passed, but I would have gotten Cedar while, like, its timing worked out the way it did. I would have gotten her while Kona was still around.
Mm-hmm.
Probably would have kept them separate just, you know, to let Kona have her space. Because I feel like older dogs don't really need 8-week-old puppies around. Yeah. But I got her, like, 4 months later. Which, you know, it gave me something to look forward to and a little bit. And I think that was really helpful in the grieving process. Just having, like, hope that I would, you know, be able to bond with another dog again. But also, sometimes I look back and I'm like, did I give myself enough time to be alone? I have, you know, a husband and 2 other dogs, but like, you know, for my heart to heal. But Cedar's been a really tremendous help in the healing process. And whether that's she keeps me active enough to not think about things, but also, you know, when I'm having those hard times and I'm just crying, like she's there for me to hug and to hold. And like, you know, my husband's like, Kristen, it's been a year. And I'm like, but it's, and Cedar doesn't give me that judgment, you
yeah,
know?
Yeah.
Cedar's just like, okay, mom, you need to cry, we'll cry.
Aww.
So she's been really, really great. It has also been really interesting because I find myself not wanting to do things with Cedar that Kona and I enjoyed because I'm like cheating on Kona's memory. The thoughts that we have zero rational.
Oh, and we don't need to rationalize it. Yeah.
You can't. They're completely illogical, irrational thoughts. You know, I'm from Virginia and I went on a road trip to Maine by myself and I loved a paddleboard. And Kona and I, that was our thing. She loved the water. If we couldn't be at the beach, she wanted to be at the river. We would just paddle all the time. And she would ride on the board and then she would swim along. It was more swimming alongside me. She didn't really like sitting still on the board. But it was one of our favorite activities to do together. And then I drove my paddleboard all the way from Virginia to Maine. And I remember standing on with Cedar, and I remember standing on the edge of Long Pond, making every single excuse as to why I could not blow up my board and take it out. And I finally decided on, oh, well, it's too windy, and I'm just going to be miserable. It was a lot. I could not bring myself to paddle without Kona. And Cedar loves the paddleboard. So, like, how is this fair to anyone? It's not. But again, these emotions have zero rational explanations.
Yeah, grief isn't rational in that way. Like, we would go on this small little walk with Amira twice a day around the block, and it's probably an 8-minute walk at a normal pace, but Amira at 13, it took her about 20 minutes, but we'd go on this little jaunt around the block. And after she passed, I couldn't do that walk with my other dogs. I couldn't walk down the street that I would walk down with Amira, because that was what me and Amira did. And and I agree that there isn't rationality behind it, but it just didn't feel right. It was like, it didn't. And now I can do the walk and it feels like I'm still with her. I'm still honoring her and it's okay. But when I was raw in my grief, it was like, I can't do this. I can't do these things with Amira, with my other dogs, because it just isn't fair.
Yeah. I fully feel that. I have decided that, like, I've given myself that time to be like, I'm going to force myself to paddle with Cedar because she loves it too. And it's going to be really weird and really emotional the first couple times I do it. But what better way to honor Kona's memory than to continue on doing something that we love together? And I think we really have to change our mindset around these things. But you do have to work through, and you can't do that when you're still raw.
Yeah. Did Kona take to paddleboard right away?
Oh, she loved it. Yeah. Yeah, she loved it. I don't even remember the first time we got on the board. She had her own little life vest and she would just paddle alongside. And when she got tired, she would get up and lay on the board. And then that was like a good 5 minutes. And then she's like, okay, I'm ready to swim again. I think she really loved swimming more than she loved paddleboarding. But yeah, she loved the water. It was funny because when I first got her, she hated it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. So my mom had to watch her. This is back when she was younger. I had her. And then I was moving houses. And for that move, I sent her back to my mom. And she watched her for a little while. And my mom came down. And we were out on the beach. And I was in the water. And mom pulled up. And she was like, okay, we're gonna go. And she let her, walked her out to the shore. And I was like, let's let her in the water. Because she hasn't seen me. And maybe, like, when I tell you, this dog came full force barreling into the water to say hello to me. And ever since, she, like, loved water.
Oh, my God. And
I know. And I'm like, oh, I wonder if, like, just her being happy to see me, and then she equated, like, oh, the water is a good thing now.
Yeah.
But ever since, I could never keep her out of the water. I mean, I remember there was a time it was like 20 degrees in January and we went for a walk along the river and there was no one there. And I was like, I'll just let her off leash, let her run. Sure enough, that dog got into the water and I had to like take my shirt off, or I had a jacket, take my jacket off, put her in the car, blast the heat, wrap her up. And like, I had to force her to get out. She would have swam until she just got hypothermia and drowned if I didn't force her.
And yeah, that pity coat is just like not conducive to being cold.
No, but no self-preservation when it came to anything having to do with swimming.
Oh my gosh.
So, yeah, the last week of her life, there's a canine pool near us, and I took her back to the pool, and I put her in a little float, because she couldn't swim anymore, even the life vest, like, so I just put her in a little float that had a mesh, it's like a float for a cooler, and I put her in that, and she just laid in the water, and we just got in together, and I tried to give her a last week of doing everything that she loved doing. So we went to the beach and we went to the pool. We made our rounds in town and stopped by and visited all her favorite spots. And then the last day we gave her a very wonderful assortment of chocolate.
Why not at this point?
The amount of times that dog has sent me to the vet over chocolate in her entire life, I was like, you know what? 45 minutes before the vet's being here, here's your sampling. What is your favorite flavor? And it was peppermint.
Oh,
loved
my God.
Peppermint.
Oh my God. So you were aware that it was coming to the end when it did?
Yeah, it probably could have happened before it did. I think Kona was ready a couple months before I was, and she was just holding. This was something that I struggled with, too. So this was something that I struggled with after the fact because I felt a little selfish. But I don't think I forced Kona to be around. We managed her pain. I think she was hanging around a little bit more for me. When I took her, I knew it was coming to the end, and I was like, all right, well, I want to take her back to the beach one more time. And we got there, and she could care less, or couldn't have cared less. Like, she didn't care. She didn't care at all. And that was the day I knew, okay, we need to do this. Because, when it, like, she didn't perk up at the water. She didn't perk up at the sand. She just laid there. We shared a pup cup, and then she, like, got up and went back to the van herself. And I was like, okay, I hear you. We'll do it next week. But I needed that for me, because it's so hard. Like, this dog has been with you for the whole time, whole life, and it's really hard to let go, especially when, like, okay, well, we're managing her pain, and she's not, like, she doesn't have cancer, she's just old, right? Like, there were times where I prayed that I would just wake up one day and she had passed in her sleep, because I didn't want to make that decision. But no, girl was stubborn till the end.
That's the pit bull way.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I had been talking with her vet, and, you know, I remember it's a husband and wife team, and they're amazing, and I love them so much. And the husband was like, oh, yeah, you know, well, you could, like, I'll support you and whatever. And I'm like, can you just make the decision for me? And then I talked to the wife, and she was like, yeah, I would do it within the next 2 weeks. I'm like, thank you. Because I can't do this myself. I need someone objectively.
Yeah.
Because you're so close to it. You are so close to it. But once I got that from her, and then I took Kona to the beach, and I saw how, like, she just didn't care, that was my sign. So I called a different vet because I wanted to do it at home. And my normal vet, they put me in contact with a couple people who they recommended. And it was the hardest, but most best thing I could have done was do it at home. I held her. We were out in the front yard, a beautiful orange and fiery sunset, and I bawled my eyes out. Like, I bet all my neighbors were like, oh, what's going on? It was terrible. Terrible. But also great and beautiful, and I would not do it any other way.
Yeah. We did the same with Amira, and it was at home. And for it being the worst day of our lives, it was so beautiful for her. It was like,
yeah,
it really just, she was comfortable. She was in her bed that she was always in, and she same. Was at home and around the people she loved. It wasn't like a stale vet clinic around people she didn't know, but it's so hard.
Yep. We're gonna have to have a big pause right here.
This is gonna be a nightmare in editing. It's like, we need a pause. Sorry. To cry. Oh my god, it's just so hard.
Yeah. But you know, that was the first time I had done an in-home service. It's in-home euthanasia. It's so hard to say that, right? Like, why? But that was the first time I had done an in-home service, and I don't think I'll ever do it any differently.
I know. Same.
Yeah. I mean, and then our dogs got to say goodbye. Our dogs, like, came out afterwards and was, like, you know, sniffing around, checking it all out. I think that kind of helped them, right? Instead of, like, oh, she left in the car and she never came back. Like, what? Okay. But then we got her cremated. And she's on my dresser, and I take her with me on my road trips.
Oh,
yeah. So there were so many things left undone.
Yeah. How long did you have her?
13 and a half years.
Yeah. Same with Amira.
Yeah.
It's never enough time.
It's not. It is so not enough time.
I guess it would be a nice segue to talk about how Kona, her life, and losing her, how has that impacted your life? I mean, you've talked a bit about personally, but professionally as well.
Oh, yeah. So where do you want me to start on that?
Has your bond and your connection with Kona changed the way that you connect with clients and client dogs? Have you seen, I guess, examples of this deep human animal bond with your clients and sort of, I don't know, help foster that in your professional photography?
Yeah. So with my career as a dog photographer now, Kona has, she inspired a lot of it. And one of the questions that I always ask my clients is if you can give your dog their best perfect day, where would you go and what would you do? Because, you know, I photograph, you know, families with dogs. Like, you can't get in front of my lens unless you have a dog or an animal. And I do think, like, I tell my clients that this is a hill that I will lovingly die on, but you're going to be in the photos whether you want to be or not.
Yeah.
You know, I'll compose you creatively. Anyone can take a photo of their dog. You have, iPhones that create gorgeous photographs right there in your hands at all time. However, what you cannot do that I can do for you is capture the way you interact with your dog. You know, the way they look at you after you've thrown the ball with them for hours and how they're so happy to be with you no matter what. Or, you know, I know that your listeners can't see that, but this picture right here, it's a man and his Brittany walking in the hunt field, and the Brittany is looking up at him with so much love and like, just to me, this portrait speaks so much of the bond and the teamwork and just the love displayed between dog and dog dad. And he wouldn't have been able to get this himself.
Yeah.
So that's where I come in. But Kona she's always there in the back of my mind, because I now look at my clients and I'm like, what are the photos that I wish I had of me and Kona? And I have a ton, and I've been professionally photographed with Kona a couple of times, and they're all amazing and they're all beautiful, but I keep going back to, okay, what are the ones that I keep looking at over and over, and what is the common theme? And most of them is the interaction shots of her and I, or, you know, how she's walking along the beach ahead of me with a ball in her mouth and I'm in the background blurry and she's just, all the focus is on her and she's just so happy. So I try to, when I'm planning sessions, I try to keep that in mind, but also I want to custom tailor it to, okay, well, my dog liked the beach and liked the water, but your dog hates water. Okay, what's their favorite activity? Where do they want to go? This entire day is going to be about your dog and enhancing your bond together. So yeah, she is still a big influence in my career.
I know we've talked about this earlier, but I came across your work and this whole area of dog photography after Amira had passed. And the overwhelming feeling for me, just someone who does photography as a hobby, is I wish I had this with Amira. I wish I had a moment captured in time of me and her. I think it's just such an amazing keepsake for that you'll always have that moment.
It'll bring you right back. And what I've started doing also outside of just photography is doing a videography and some films, because when Kona was dying, I was going through a big crisis of, oh my gosh, I want to do everything. I want to capture her. I have this photo, but I don't have this photo in this location. Like, I mean, I was doing anything I could to hold on to keeping her alive. And what I found is video and movement and the sound of her collar jingling when she runs and the way she kicks out her little back leg. She used to do backflips, and I'm sure that her hips were shot at the end. Like, they were just done. But she always, like, ever since little, she would run with a little kick out of her back leg. And that was something that was really unique to her that I loved seeing. So I would start filming her, you know, sometimes professionally on my nice camera, sometimes just on the iPhone. And it's the videos that I find myself going back to. So I've started to do a lot more videos for clients and kind of just throwing that in there and keeping, it's just another way to keep their memory alive and like really see the movement and the sounds. It's really powerful.
So do you have clients that every few years they'll bring you back and capture a moment again so you can kind of see them through time?
Yeah. Yeah. So I have a lot of repeat clients. I love my clients. They're wonderful. They're outdoorsy dog moms and dog dads. They're my kind of people. But yeah, so I'll have clients who bring me back year after year because they want to, you know, either create an album or a few albums over time. You know, sometimes they'll just do like, we're going to do one big statement piece. And, you know, when they're a puppy and then maybe when they're like 3 to 5 years old and then when they're 8 and then when they're a senior, it kind of tells the story of their life. Also, I do a lot of, you know, different types of work. So like I specialize in adventure sessions and then also upland sessions. So sometimes they'll hire me to go out on an upland hunt with them. And then they'll say, okay, now that we got that, I want to, you know, go play down by the river. Cause you know, dogs have a lot of hobbies too.
Yeah.
You know, so they want to capture like everything that they do with their dog together. And then sometimes it's seasonality, like, oh, well, let's do a snow photo this time. And all right, well, this is the summer. Let's go down by the river and play. Or, you know, I used to do a lot of underwater dog work because I'm a scuba diver. I don't do that as much anymore, but I still do. And sometimes people will call me up for that. But yeah, no, it's all about what does your dog love to do? What is their perfect day? And how can we document that?
And it's just such a beautiful way to honor them. You're not putting the dog in a situation that looks beautiful. You're saying, what is beautiful to them? And how can we capture their essence? Yeah, I love that.
It is all about what the dog wants to do and what their element.
Yeah. So something I noticed about your talk compared to other talks so I bought the all access pass. Yeah. So I didn't actually watch those videos because I think the summit was in like September 2022 and I didn't get to watching those videos until like December. But something I noticed that was different about you, and I don't know if you do this like consciously, but when you show pictures of like portraits that you, because I think your talk was all about the underwater photography and you were showing pictures of client dogs and you would always say the name of the dog. You would always say like, oh, this is my goofy newfie friend, or like you always either talked about their personality or you always gave the name of the dog. And I think it just showed maybe subconsciously your connection to these animals that you're photographing because you know their names, you spent this time with them. I just think it was such a beautiful way to like showcase your work, but also showcase who you are as a dog photographer and how connected you are to your clients.
That means so much to me. Definitely subconsciously. There will be times where I will show up to a session and I have to like look back at my notes to just confirm that I know the human's name. Oh, but I know for sure the dog's name. I'm like, hey, buddy. Yeah. And oh shit, what was your name? I do that a little bit sometimes. So if any of my clients are listening, I'm sorry, I love you. But yeah, no, I definitely when I do a planning session with each client and we go deep into the relationship. And I have a questionnaire for my clients that I just let people know, like, hey, it looks long. It is long. There's a lot of questions on here. Only the ones with the star are required. Sometimes I'll get back like a couple, you know, 2 or 3 sentences. Other times I will get back like novels and like 2 or 3 paragraphs of the relationship and like goes, I love reading those are my favorite.
Yeah,
because it also tells me like, okay, well, it's not just me who loves their dog this way, right? And I feel like there's a pet owner and then there's like a dog mom, right? Different type of relationship, so you can always tell who's who.
Yeah, I love that personal connection, I guess. It's not just like, oh, here's a dog I photographed. It was like, oh, here's this dog. They really loved putting their head under the water, or this dog, it took some time and then they eventually got used to it. And it was, yeah, you always had the names of the dogs. You always talked about their personality. It's just like, I don't know. I think it says a lot about you and your, like, the fact that you go out of your way to build that rapport and build that connection. It shows in your photographs.
Thank you. I will never just show up to a session and shoot without building that relationship. Yeah. I can't do my job unless I build that relationship.
Yeah.
Because I can't tell the story of your dog. If I don't know your dog, I can't. I mean, I can create, yeah, sure. It'll just be like generic. Oh, okay, sit still, look pretty. I don't do a sit still, look pretty photos.
Yeah.
I do a wild and free, wild and crazy photos. Lots of personality, lots of interaction. And yeah, thank you for saying that. That means a lot to me.
Yeah, I wondered if it was something that you consciously did, but you said it with such like ease that I'm like, I don't even know if Kristen knows that she does that. But like, if you listen to the other presenters, they don't always do that. It's more of just like, oh, here's a really nice like lab that I took a photo of. And yeah, you always knew like the dog's name, where they were from, like the client. It was, yeah. And I don't know. I think it was really cool to see.
Thank you. Thank you.
Is there anything that you feel like we missed that's important to tell Kona's story and tell your story?
I've done a book.
Oh.
And Kona's featured in it.
Oh.
And I was looking back and reading this before we got on today. And it says, so I wrote all the stories from the dog's point of view. It says, I'm Kona and I'm a soul dog. My mom, Kristen, the author of this book you're reading, rescued me from a county shelter in Florida over 14 years ago. And both of our lives have been forever changed by each other. She was going through a rough time in her life, struggling with her dad's cancer diagnosis, and decided to head to the shelter to be around dogs in the hope that they would lift her spirit. I was in the last kennel and saw her making her way down the rows. All of the other dogs were going crazy, barking very loudly and jumping at the gate. I saw that she quickly passed by them, so I decided to sit nicely, patiently waiting quietly for her to see me. You know that love at first sight feeling? Well, when we locked eyes, it hit me like a ton of bricks, and I know it hit her too. I'd say some other stuff in here. I've been by my mom's side for 14 years, comforting through... Oh, also, do you ever age your dogs accidentally? Because I aged her by a year, so that's supposed to be 13 years.
Oh!
Yeah, so sorry, Kona. I've been by my mom's side for 13 years, comforting her through the loss of her father, moving back to Virginia with her, watching over her, being there for her on her wedding day, snuggling up with her every night, keeping her active, reminding her to play at every opportunity, and just showing her every day how much I love her. I know she loves it when I kiss her face, so I try to sneak that in as much as possible.
Oh, just when I thought crying was done.
Oh, I know. I'll have to send you a copy of the book so you can see it. There's about 44 of my clients in here. It's their story of, you know, just life in there. Sometimes how we goes deep, how they changed their parents' life, and other times it's just about what the dog loves to do. This is Floppy Poppy.
Oh my god.
Her name's Poppy. I call her Floppy Poppy.
What a goober.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
So, anyways, I'll send you a copy of this if you would like.
That would be awesome. I'd love that. And then I have one more question before we wrap up. If you could have one more day with Kona, what would you guys do?
Oh, how old is she?
Let's say she's at her best self. What would you do?
At her best self. Oh man. All right. So at her just 24 hours.
It's only one day.
Damn it. Oh, I guess we'd have to wait. Well, I'm in Richmond, so I can make it to the beach and the mountains within one day. So that's what we would do. Because at her best self, we would do a sunrise on the beach because we're on the East Coast, and we would play in the waves, and I would throw the ball until she is done. And we would then get in the car and we would head to Starbucks. We'd probably do Starbucks before the sunrise. But we would get pop cups and black iced coffee. And then we would drive to the mountains and we would go on some hikes. And then we would finish along the James River, just paddling for a wonderful evening sunset, and she would swim her little heart out. And then we would come home and we would snuggle up on the couch, and she could have all of the chocolate that she wants.
All the peppermint chocolate that she wants.
All the peppermint chocolate she wants. Yeah. If anyone, that, it was really hard. It was really hard to watch, but I filmed myself. I haven't shown it to anyone. It's up until now, it's been just for me. I do plan on sharing it eventually, but I still can't watch it without like bawling my eyes out. So once I can, I'll share it. But I filmed our chocolate sampling, and I'm so glad I did, because she loved chocolate, and it was something that, like, I've given her so much charcoal at the vet because of it, like, so much. But I can sit back and watch her just be in heaven over this chocolate, and she has no clue what's about to happen, and I am the one who was in so much heartache and so much pain, and you just look at her and she's like, oh, she's sitting up on her bed. We were on the front porch and she's like, oh, this one's good. Oh, but I really like this. Oh, this one's okay. Oh, but I really like peppermint. And just watching her try all of them. I would tell anyone that if they just give them whatever they want that 30 minutes before the vet's coming, whether you record it, whether you don't, I don't care, but just anything that your dog loved to eat, by the time it causes any harm, they're at the end of their journey anyways. But she, man, she loved it. And I'm so glad I was able to give that to her.
Is that a moment that you think you would ever be comfortable sharing? Or is that a moment that's always going to be between you and Kona?
I don't know. I want to share it because I want other people. So I posted in this pet vet group because I wanted to get the timing right. So I posted a picture of Kona and I said, hey guys, tomorrow she's gonna end her journey, because it's a Facebook group where only vets can comment. I was like, tomorrow her journey's ending. I want to do this for her, but I don't know the time. Like, how early is too early? I don't want to cause her any issues or any discomfort. And so a couple of vets wrote back, but it got like 19,000 likes or reactions. And I got inundated with private messages. Some of them were really, really kind and supportive. There was a half handful that were not very kind, so be aware. But it was mostly, oh my gosh, I wish I would have thought about this. So the ones outside of like, I'm so sorry for your loss. Hey, I wish I would have thought about this. Or, hey, you've given me like a great idea. This is what we're going to do with our dog because they love chocolate or they love cheeseburgers. Or, so I want to share it in that sense of like, hey, did you know this is what you can do with your dog on their last day? But it is this just beautiful private moment between her and I that I might share like a screenshot or maybe like 5 seconds or something, but I don't know.
Yeah. Cause that's what I struggle with. I have like, so Amira on her last day, we watched a movie together and she couldn't move. So I sat with her on her bed and had my laptop and we watched a movie. And to me, I took pictures of it, but I'm like, I don't know if that's just, that's like sacred to her and I, and like, that's what we did on her last day. And like, also she wasn't her best self. And I don't know that I want that memory for other people who didn't see her that way. It's like, you can remember her being the happy go lucky Amira, yeah, wagging her tail and not the one that couldn't even move her head.
Yeah. But then also like on the flip side of all this, it's real and it's true to life. And other people might need to see like, hey, this is normal. I think the whole like soul dog journey and bond and grief process, it isn't shared enough. So it's not normalized enough. Right. So then if people like you and I and others put out, hey, this is normal, this is what you're going through, is it's normal to feel this way. No, you're not weird for having this deep relationship. I mean, basically this, what your entire podcast is about is, you know, showing people that it's real and you can have these deep relationships with animals. So I kind of wonder if like maybe we should share a little bit, maybe not all of it, right? But maybe a screenshot and then talk about what we did and then have the video for us.
Right. I guess I'm more thinking of people that knew Amir in my life, but I totally get what you're saying, that these people that don't know me and don't know Amira, but talking about what end of life looked like with a soulmate and how it can be, you can still have these beautiful memories that you hold on to without it just being, it's going to be a hard day, but it doesn't need to be like, it doesn't need to be the worst day ever. You can still have beautiful moments within that last day.
It can be your worst day of your life, but it needs to be your dog's best day.
Right. Yeah.
I do kind of think that it needs to be more talked about, more put out there. Cause I've had clients who I go through and some of my questions and they just start tearing up and they're like, oh my gosh, I didn't know we were going this deep, or I didn't know that like other people feel this same way that I'm feeling. And I'm like, yeah, girl, you're normal. Like this is really, really normal. So I just think that like the more it's talked about, where if anyone is thinking about doing photos or video with their dog, I would plan it while they're still happy and still able to enjoy the process too. The most heartbreaking calls that I get are, hey, I'm putting my dog down in 2 days and I need you to come do photos. And I'm out of town, or because I travel a lot for photos too, and I can't do anything. Or we can do it, but the dog is miserable the whole time because they're just in so much pain. Those aren't the photos that you're ever going to put that on a wall, and you're not going to look back at that in an album and really enjoy it. So I always, sooner is better than later.
And where would you direct people to if they want to get more information about your pet photography?
Oh yeah, you can follow me on Instagram. I'm a lot more active on Instagram than I am on Facebook. It's at Kristen Murray Photography. But my website is probably the best place to contact or to find out more information about actual portrait sessions, and that's KristenJMurray.com.
And we'll put all that in the show notes so people can find you.
Cool.
I want to give a huge thank you to Kristen for trusting me with Kona's story. It's really not easy to share such an important piece of yourself with the world, and you do end up having to put yourself in quite a vulnerable place to be able to talk about an animal soulmate. So Kristen, thank you so much for opening up and sharing your story with Kona. In the show notes, I've included all of Kristen's contact information if you wanted to learn more about her and see some of her beautiful portraits. I've also included in the show notes an NPR conversation with author Bronwyn Dickey, who wrote Pitbull, The Battle Over an American Icon. I think the conversation does a really good job dispelling many of the myths that exist around the quote-unquote Pitbull breed, which Kristen and I did touch on a little bit in the episode. Now go give your animal soulmate a big hug, and I'll see you next week. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Animal Soulmates podcast. If you enjoyed the show, please consider subscribing on your favorite podcast platform and leave us a positive rating or review. Follow us on Instagram at Animal Soulmates Pod for updates and pictures of our guests with their beautiful animal soulmates. This podcast is produced by Citizens of Sound. Our theme song is Mastering the Art by Big Score Audio. Have a story that would be a good fit for the show? Send me an email at animalsoulmatespod@outlook.com. That's animalsoulmates with an S, P-O-D, @outlook.com. Finally, are you thinking about adding an animal to your family? Why not consider adoption through your local animal shelter? There are plenty of dogs and cats just waiting to become someone's animal soulmate. See you next time!